Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 28th. I'm Ray Graff. In case you haven't noticed, it's pothole season out there on the roads, and that's Moida. Joining us today to answer your questions about cars and trucks is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your questions. And believe me, this is a popular program when Gordon's on. So call early, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is in the house. He will answer your car questions right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back Gordon Fricke this afternoon to answer your questions about your car or your truck. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He owns and operates Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Always great to have Gordon Fricke back on the program. Our number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question. 800-348-2551. You may also email us if you wish. It's voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, it's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Yeah, we were talking before the show about that cold snap we had.
Yeah.
And what it did to some vehicles.
You know, we hadn't had sustained cold for that many days in years, I don't think.
Yeah.
And we saw a tremendous amount of engine oil issues. And one of the things that startled me is I got a vehicle in one day, and it was in the middle of this cold snap. Vehicle was dropped off the night before, so it sat outside all night. So it was about maybe, 10 degrees above zero out. Brought the car in, raised it on a lift. It was in for an oil change. We removed the drain plug. Nothing came out.
Wow.
So I said, it can't be out of oil because the oil light went off as usual. The engine's not making any abnormal sounds. What's going on? The oil would not flow. It was like molasses.
Wow.
We had to warm up the oil pan with a heat gun to get it to come out, and then warmed it up, flushed a little bit of oil through it to get it out, and I took a sample. I put that sample in our freezer, and I reproduced the problem, and that oil would not flow out of a freezer. And I put another sample next to it of oil that was about 4,000 or 5,000 miles old, and then I put some new oil next to it. So I made a little test in the freezer.
Yeah.
And the moral of the story is don't go too long on oil changes. It doesn't matter if it's synthetic or conventional because this car was on synthetic oil, and it turns out it went about 10,000 miles,
yeah,
which, believe it or not, is okay by some car manufacturers. This vehicle was probably 5 minutes away from losing its engine.
If wow.
it hadn't come in this morning, I think it would have failed because there'd be nothing. Let's say it got to be 5 below zero the next morning. There wouldn't have been any pumpable oil in that crankcase.
Wow.
So that's the deal. You can't wait that long to change the oil.
So the viscosity was fine while it was new, but after 10,000 miles, it just
exactly,
did not flow.
Exactly. The additives get beat out of the oil, burned out of it, used up. You end up with oil that can't thin down in cold weather. It's thick, gooey stuff.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Gordon Fricke is our guest on Vox Pop today. 800-348-2551. As is always the case when Gordon is on, the phones are lighting up. Let's go over to Jesse and Troy. Jesse.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, you'd mentioned synthetic oil. That's what my question is about. That's kind of a two-part question. First of all, what is synthetic oil? Because usually if something is described as synthetic, that means it's made from oil. So that's part one. And then part two is it worth it? To get a synthetic oil change is so much more expensive. I was just wondering about your opinion on the difference or whether it's worth it.
We've talked about this before.
Yes.
Synthetic oil is oil.
It starts out as base oil, and then it gets a lot more synthetic or man-made additives to change its ability to take more deposits in suspension, to stay thinner at colder temperatures. It allows its viscosity to keep moving around, where conventional motor oil won't let the viscosity change as much as a synthetic will. So, yes, it is a superior product, and just about all of the car manufacturers are using it as factory fill and recommending or requiring it in their change intervals to keep the warranty active and all that.
Okay.
So, yes, there is a difference. It is more expensive, and it took me – I didn't just fall into believing in synthetics early on when Mobil 1 said you can go 12,000 miles between oil changes, because that you still can't do that. But, yes, to your question, it is better, and it should be used.
All right, Jesse, thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, 800-348-2551 is the number. Barbara in Northampton. Barbara, you're on.
Good afternoon. It turns out my question is also about synthetic oils. There must be something in the air today.
Okay.
I have a 2016 Honda HR-V, and obviously that comes with synthetic oil. I had owned previously for 12 years a Honda Civic. I changed that oil religiously. Partly based on information I learned from you years ago, which was every 3,000 miles on that was not synthetic oil. That car could have gone easily another 150,000, but I got enamored with this new HRV. I love it. I went in my usual way. I knew it was synthetic oil, so I said, I'm going to go every 4,000 miles. When I went in for a 4,000-mile check, I got lambasted by the service manager about how he didn't use the word stupid, but he might as well have said that for me to change it. And he said, you don't need to change this oil in these cars and for every 10,000 miles.
Huh.
So I know you just alluded to it a little bit, and I just can't believe it. And I just kept thinking, well, maybe that's good for you because it'll mean selling more cars for you in the long term.
Yeah.
But I made him change it anyway, and I said, the next time Gordon Fricke gets on, I am getting on the phone.
Yeah.
So,
I
would really like some clarification about the timing of that.
Yep, it's very good that you are asking these questions, because I encounter this very, very often, and it's a struggle between, do I trust the dealer who is being influenced by the manufacturer, who is being influenced by the EPA to keep the oil in the engines longer, and I've said this a million times, I understand that 100%. The studies have been done by engineering companies on car engines and engine oils, and I always allude to the Porsche company because they're good engineers, and you know they not only build cars, but you know they started out as an engineering company, and even though they have vehicles that hold 8 to 10 quarts of oil, and could potentially go 10,000 miles between oil changes because they hold so much oil and they require synthetic. Porsche, behind the scenes, says, we recommend for the best life and performance of your engine and lifespan to do it every 3,000 to 5,000 miles.
Yeah.
So I'm with them. I'm with them, 3 to 5.
Three
may be a little on the low end nowadays on cars that are driven well, not just started and stopped and run, you know, terrible, just run errands and never go anywhere. So I'm not against going 5,000. I like to put it in the middle at 4.
That's where Barbara is.
Yeah, and then if you
that's exactly what I did.
Yep.
And you might think I committed an error.
No, you didn't.
and really being insulted like I was crazy.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm really happy to hear a clarification.
Yeah, let me just add this, because the vehicle, I don't know if you heard Ray and I speaking at the beginning of the show about this vehicle whose oil was 10,000 miles old and wouldn't pour, and the engine was going to fail in about 5 minutes.
Right.
That was a Honda, and it had the countdown system with the percentages. And
yes, I have that.
Yeah. So
I ignore it.
Yeah. So you're on the right page, because you know what? If you own this car to 150,000 miles, you're going to have contributed to that long life by keeping the oil change at these intervals.
Well, that's what I understood, and I learned that mostly from you in the past. So I am thrilled to hear that I'm really not off my rocker.
Nope.
And that is, I'm going to stick with it then.
Yep, 3 to 5.
You. Thanks, Barbara. We appreciate the call. Those oil lights on vehicles, and I had vehicles that would count down.
Yeah.
And are there any that actually do diagnostics of the oil quality?
No, they don't sample the oil. But they do, they're smarter than they used to be. They do take into consideration start and run cycles. Let's say you commuted to, let's say you had an hour commute every single day.
Yeah.
Hop in the car, start up, let it warm up a little bit and go.
Right.
Get to work, shut it off, and you do that all week long.
Yeah.
Those are pretty good driving conditions for the oil and for the engine. So in that case, you, your counter, if it's a smart counter, will tell you, you don't need to change it sooner than the guy who starts it, drives it 4 minutes, shuts it off, and does that all week long. So some are pure mileage, and some consider the type of driving.
Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
Support for WMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, opening March 10th with two exhibits from the museum's permanent collection, capturing the essence and fine art animals, information at arkellmuseum.org. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care, all on one campus, daughtersofsarah.org. Hooked Seafood Company in Galleria 7 Market, Latham, fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, custom orders and platters available, hookedseafoodinc.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the Capital Region to engage in conservation science, lecture series, and citizen science participants helping collect data and research, albanypinebush.org. And Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. imediaconsult.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. And Gordon Fricke is our guest today. And we'll take a quick email here, Gordon, and then we'll go right back to the phones. This one's from Ian in Saugerties, who writes, "We have a problem with our 2007 Jeep Liberty 4x4 V6. Every time we fill it with gas, about a half second after the pump automatically stops when the tank is full, about 4 ounces of gas come out, spilling out of the fill hole and down the side of the vehicle. It happens every time, no matter which gas station we use, and we do not top off the tank after the pump automatically stops. Coincidentally, the gas gauge drops rapidly after the half-full mark. Don't know if this is related to that problem. I see no problem that a paper towel can't solve, but the wife is concerned. What do you think might be causing this?" And that's from Ian in Saugerties.
Yeah. Oftentimes, when you have trouble filling, or it spills out afterwards, or it takes fuel extremely slowly,
yeah,
there tends to be often an issue with the tank venting system that allows air out when the gasoline goes in.
Ah.
And there's a valve that automatically opens to allow tank filling, but it puts those vapors into something called the charcoal canister, so they don't go out into the atmosphere as hydrocarbons.
Okay.
So there's a possibility that he's got a problem with his tank vent during fill-up, and it could be... And the canister also has a vent to the atmosphere, too. So there could be something going on in those vents. And I have seen in some cases, depending on how these cars are built, mud, dirt, debris, junk finds its way in the vent, and it can't flow the air out fast enough. And my question always in a call like this, if he was calling us, would be, is the check engine light on? I don't think it is, or he probably would have mentioned it.
Probably.
But if the check engine light is on, and you're having trouble filling the tank, get it scanned, because it could be one of those vent valves for that system.
Is that an expensive fix? Do you have to take the whole tank
out?
No,
not usually.
Okay.
So, and also sometimes what I would recommend he do is call the dealer or call Jeep just to be sure there's no recalls or open bulletins on that subject.
Okay.
Because they may have a fix out there.
And his other question, related or not, about the gas rapidly depleting after it hits half full.
That could be a gauging issue because it's not going to burn more fuel.
Right.
Notice there'll be more fuel. You know, you're going to notice it doesn't run right.
So
again, the check engine light will be on. I'd say he's got a gauge issue going on there.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And over to Ruby in Phoenicia. Hi, Ruby. You're on.
Yes. Hi. I was told by my mechanic this afternoon to come pick up my car. He mentioned that my front right tire and my left rear tire are more worn than the other two. I bought the tires all together. It's the fifth Jeep I've owned, and this is the first time I've ever heard of that. I was just wondering what it might be.
What model is the Jeep?
It's an 07 Grand Cherokee Rocky Mountain Edition.
Okay. So it's you have tires on opposite corners.
Front right, rear left.
Correct.
Yeah. Without seeing the wear pattern, and I don't know if he described what the if it was unevenly worn or just plain less tread than the other two, but and I'm not sure on your Grand Cherokee, but I think this is the case. Most vehicles today have what's called a dual diagonal braking system, and the opposite corner tires are linked. So the fluid pressure goes from right rear to left front and vice versa across the vehicle. And the reason they do that is if you lose a brake line, you will have more steady and straight braking because you won't be blowing a front or a rear circuit.
Oh,
you'll blow a side circuit. So you'll have one front tire and one rear tire doing the stopping for you. So the car stops fairly straight.
Right.
So there's the possibility, and this is pure speculation, that there's a fluid issue causing your two tires that are wearing more to receive more braking pressure. That's very hard to test. That takes big equipment. But other than an alignment issue or the tires have been rotated and they just ended up where the two worst ones are on those two corners would be more likely.
Why would there be any worse ones if they were all bought together and rotated religiously?
Well, let's say you, in this vehicle, primarily drives the rear wheels. So let's say they got rotated at 8,000 miles, 10,000 miles, and the tire shop moved them around instead of just front to rear. They decided to put them at different corners, which you can do. That would explain why you may have more wear on one corner than the other, or they only rotated one side because at the time that was the best thing to do. That's probably the explanation.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, the guest, and Diane in Saugerties is next. Diane.
Hi. I have a 2008 Dodge Dakota pickup, and it has four-wheel drive. And I've been noticing that at certain times I get a feeling and a noise like I'm going over the rumbles on the thruway, but I'm not, I'm just on the plain road. And it seems to happen between 38 and 44 miles an hour.
Are there a lot of miles on this vehicle?
About 110, I think.
Okay. If you got to do a few things to experiment to see when this problem occurs. Does it occur when you're accelerating?
Well, I'll give you one more hint. That it's a little embarrassing because I may have done something bad, but a few weeks ago I was in four-wheel drive, and it happened a lot more. And I know I shouldn't have even been going 40 miles an hour in four-wheel drive, but I was.
I have seen on your exact vehicle a lot of front drive shaft issues, the drive shaft that powers the front axle. And on that that particular truck, Dodge used a conventional universal joint on one end and a constant velocity joint on the other. And we replaced a bunch of those on those trucks at one point when they were really popular. So I would based on what I've seen in the past, have the condition of the drive shaft checked out, the front drive shaft, because that gave us a lot of trouble years ago on these trucks.
And it would cause that rumbling?
Yeah, because when you're at the right throttle, right amount of torque or load, and the key, she said, was when she was in four-wheel drive, that really brings it about. So, and I would also be concerned with...
And it would happen at a certain miles per hour.
It can
and
be.
And it seems to also happen if I'm accelerating lightly uphill at that speed.
Do you notice if you happen to take your foot off the gas, it stops making that sound? Or have you never tried that?
I don't know. It's a very short sound, only lasts a moment, but I'll try that.
Experiment with it. The minute it does the rumble, completely let off on the gas pedal, and just see if it immediately stops. If it does, it is a drivetrain-related vibration, and then the shop's got to find out what part of the drivetrain it is.
I did take it to my regular shop, and they found a broken, I think, tie rod, which they replaced.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to answer
what
that.
What you're talking about is different.
Yeah, I think you've got a drivetrain-related vibration.
Okay, you don't think it's a transmission?
It's possible, because that is part of the drivetrain. There's a lot of things moving that vehicle along. So I would do the experiment and then take it back into your shop and say, hey, this is what I discovered, and that will lead them in the right direction.
All right, Diane, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke, the guest here on Vox Pop today, 800-348-2551 is the number. John in Monticello. John, you're on.
Good afternoon. I want to ask you a question about brake fluid. I had a recent brake inspection done on my car, and the mechanic taking a look at it said that the brake fluid was discolored. He actually said it was brown, and I guess it's supposed to be clear. I wanted to ask you, what could cause that, and what is the danger of the discoloration of the brake fluid? I mean, if it's a hydraulic brake system, won't it still operate fine just the same?
Well, that's a very commonly misunderstood and overlooked component in the brake fluid. How old is your car?
It's a 2005 Honda Accord.
Okay. If you look in your maintenance manual, I believe Honda will say something about they recommend having the brake fluid changed probably every 2 years. Most car manufacturers are at the 2 year, some are at three. And the reason being is that the brake fluid has a property to where it wants to absorb moisture from the air. It's called hygroscopic.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before. It's a common concern. And it's dragging moisture in everywhere it can, through the cap, through the seals, and it contaminates the fluid with moisture. And the more moisture the brake fluid takes on, the lower its boiling point becomes. And the fluid out at the wheels where the brake calipers are located can get very hot in the summer. And when the fluid boils inside those components, it turns partially to air, and you lose your brake pedal. So it causes severe brake fade, severe loss of brake pedal.
Yeah.
Car cools down, brake pedals back. You say, what happened? I just lost my brakes an hour ago. Now they're perfect.
Interesting.
So anyway, it's a very good question, and the brake fluid should be changed to get that bad fluid out of there.
I see. Is it a problem possibly also with the hoses themselves, where the moisture is getting in?
I don't know if it can drag it through the hoses or not, but the brake fluid has this incredible ability to find moisture, and that's the whole downside.
Well, can't they
to it.
Make any that doesn't do that?
Yes, there is full synthetic. Here we go again with synthetics. We have a synthetic brake fluid made out of silicone. No car manufacturer that I know of, maybe other than super high performance, uses it from the factory.
Hmm. Yeah. But it's okay to use it in any car?
You can, but you have to completely flush the brake fluid system out of all of the brake fluid and then convert it to synthetic, which is DOT number 5.
Expensive, I imagine.
It's a little bit. It's not really practical to do to a plain old passenger car.
Okay. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and let's go over to line 6. And Gregory and Troy is on. Gregory.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So my question is regarding brake systems as well. I believe it's an issue with the master cylinder. When I step on the brake, there's moderate pressure, and when I compress the brake pedal as far as I can go, the last inch or so gives, and there's a splurting noise that comes from somewhere. And I checked the vacuum booster. It's there. And now I do have holes in my brake lines, but I've remedied those, and the problem persists.
Are you – this is when you're at – the vehicle's not moving, and you're pressing this brake pedal down almost to the floor. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, yeah. What kind of vehicle is it?
This is a 2001 Chevy S10 pickup.
Okay. You may not have all of the air out of that system from the rusty lines, which you want to be 100% sure that it's bled properly. But if you take most vehicles with the engine running but the vehicle not moving, and you concentrate on pushing that brake pedal down, you will feel that it's going way farther than it should. And if you were in motion, if you didn't have ABS brakes, they'd have been locked up way before that point.
Yeah.
So don't get too overly concerned about what it feels like when you're not moving, unless it's just about hitting the floor. But the swooshing sound could be one of two things. You could have a weak master cylinder if there's a ton of miles on the vehicle, and or there's still some air in the system somewhere, and the master cylinder is traveling farther than it wants to, and that's what you're hearing when it gets close to the end. And also we see sticking brake pads causing a artificially soft brake pedal and poor braking ability.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to it. You want to make sure all your pads are free and your air is completely out. And if the truck has drum brakes in the rear, they need to be adjusted properly. So there's a bunch of things you need to check there.
Gregory, thanks a lot for the call. And our number, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Boy, what a conversation. All the different situations. I have two quick questions. One involves ethanol gas. Okay. I have a 2006 2007 Toyota Scion, and it gets like 38 miles a gallon. And lately, the check engine light has come on because we drive it infrequently. It has 102,000 miles on it, and it's my mother's car, and we drive it long distance when we do that. And so that check engine light only goes off if I use non-ethanol 91 octane that, you know, Stewart sells, for example.
Right.
And the same is true. I have a 2005, and I'm going to ask your help. That's the second question on the 2005 Subaru, which has 225,000 miles on it and is perfect in every way, except I have a problem with the ATF light, the automatic transmission fluid light. And I asked them if they would flush it, and they said better to leave sleeping dogs lie. So
okay.
I'd like your opinion.
All right. So the Scion with the check engine light when you're not running ethanol free, correct?
Right. Premium. Yeah.
Right. And the other car does the same.
It does.
Both of them do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That question crops up periodically, and the odd thing about it is we had a call some time ago, could be a year or two ago.
I think I might have called.
It was about a Scion with whose check engine light came on but was off with non-ethanol, and
that was me.
That was you. Okay. Yeah. How long ago was it? See how my brain is acting.
A year ago.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That was pretty good.
Yeah,
good for you.
So
it still does it.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone, it checks out every other which way fine. And I also believe that, by the way, guys, changing the oil, you know, frequently, regardless of your driving conditions, is the best thing you can do for your car.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's what I think happens on older cars with some mileage on them that don't get driven a lot. The ethanol in the gasoline is alcohol. And
right.
It reacts a little bit differently when it burns, and the sensors...
pick it up.
Yeah, and the sensors may respond slightly differently than non-ethanol gas. So what you probably have is some sensor in your vehicle, your upstream oxygen sensor more than likely, is probably a little bit tired or a little bit contaminated, and
right.
the non-ethanol covers it, and it keeps the light satisfied. So you can do a couple things. You can get a product called Cataclean. It goes in the gas, and it cleans your fuel injectors, your combustion chambers, and your oxygen sensors.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the name of this
Cataclean.
Cataclean. And I would.
I have four cats, so that's not hard for me to remember.
Yeah, yeah. Don't let your cat drink
no,
this
that
stuff.
Would be a
it's
bad
not.
Thing.
No.
But no, I would try that in. You can use this in both cars, any car. Follow the instructions, just for kicks. See what that does to the check engine light. And going to the Subaru because we got a lot more calls here.
Yeah,
but
we have to take a break.
A lot of transmission shops will say on that tremendous mileage, if the fluid is filthy and dirty, you flush it. You could. Loosen
create
up some
a prop.
Stuff. You, but it's possible. My recommendation is to drain and refill it, not do a total flush, so you don't shock the transmission.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
You can do that a couple of times to ease out that bad fluid.
Oh, that's a good bit of advice. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we do have to take a break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. The home stretch straight away.
Support for WMT comes from MassMatch. For over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. A worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. A plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, cool sculpting treatment, and laser and skin care since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEK, plasticsurgery.com. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York. A country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. Waterwheelvillage.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. And Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and we answer your car and truck questions and a couple of emails here, and then back to the phones, and we'll do as well as we can here with all these calls. Quickly, this one is from Adrian. J.C. Whitney used to sell a simple rod attached to a cord. You inserted it where your dipstick goes, and it heated the oil. So simple. I hear there are pricey products out there. Anything as simple as that?
That's really interesting because I remember those things seeing in the catalog. And, yeah, it's a little heater element that goes down into the dipstick.
Dangerous? Okay.
No, not really. Warms the oil up. The engine starts better.
Okay.
If you can still buy them, certainly is harmless.
Okay, and this one is on oil life. My oil gets changed every 10,000 to 15,000 miles, sometimes half and half, sometimes all petroleum-based. The car just achieved 300,000 miles. Did use one quart at 5,000 miles this time. Ford Crown Vic 2007, model discontinued in 2011. Peter and Clinton. I love those Crown
That's
Vicks.
Fantastic.
I love those huge
lifespan.
Old Crown Vicks.
The taxi industry really was distraught when they discontinued that car.
Yeah.
Taxi and liveries, because they used Crown Vicks and Grand Marquis like crazy.
Such a great car.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. All right, this one is from Rich in New Jersey. My wife has a 2013 Honda Accord with 40,000 miles on it. She took it to the dealer for a minor recall fix and had them do an oil change while she was there. The service manager came out, told her that her transmission fluid was dirty, and he recommended replacing it. She, not knowing anything about such things, said, okay. I think they wouldn't have tried that on me. We don't drive in the deserts of Nevada or Texas. We drive in New Jersey. No severe driving. I don't know. I've been on the Jersey Turnpike. I think that's pretty severe.
Severe.
I would contend that if it needed replacement, there was something wrong with the transmission seal or filter or something. What would be a proper response to a service manager trying to sell me this service? How can I challenge him effectively? Is it reasonable to have dirty transmission fluid after only 40,000 miles?
Yes, because the contamination comes from within the transmission, not from the outside. So
okay.
Service manager was that was a good recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones we go, and let's go to Donna in Wappingers Falls. Donna.
Hi. How bad is it to be in the wrong gear? Like lugging it, you know, into the next gear, or forgetting to go into fifth, and, you know, like...
Forgetting to go into fifth is not too bad.
3,000 or above 3,000, what's the range?
That's a good question, because years ago, there was way more manual transmissions out there, particularly in trucks, and it seemed like, I don't know if I should say old-timers, but old-school drivers.
I am an old-timer.
Well, but I mean, old guys in trucks used to lug the engine, and they would, they were afraid to keep the RPMs higher. They thought it was better to keep it as low as absolutely possible, lug that engine down. Really not that good of a thing for it. Now you've got controls that won't let you over-rev it and harm it.
Even on a standard?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yep. You could hold most cars, and nobody go out and do this, but most all cars today have rev limiters. So you could go start your car up, hold it to the floor, and not do any damage, because it'll just reach a point and it'll kind of flutter and make sounds, but it won't be screaming and blowing up.
All right, don't do that, anybody.
But you should not lug it down terribly. And forgetting to put it in fifth is not a big deal unless you're going 90.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I've gotten not that fifth.
Yeah.
But sometimes.
But what kind of car is it?
You know, I'm just driving along. Oh, I should have shifted.
What kind of car is it?
Oh, it's a little Saturn.
Yeah. I mean, those engines, it's a four-cylinder overhead cam engine, so they don't mind some RPMs.
Oh.
So.
Can I ask you about the slight emergency of the day?
Sure.
It was for 4 days. It was the check engine light was on, and then it occurred to me to ask someone. And so I took it into one of the auto places. They stuck something in and analyzed it and printed it out. And he said the sensors and check the connectors to see if they're bad or good. But then meanwhile, it says, just replace, master technician said, replace spark plug wires and spark plugs. So is that wise to just do that, or take it to someplace else and go further?
Well, the problem with the check engine light is it can come on for 60, 70, 80, some cars 100 reasons. So it needs to be narrowed down. And, and me not knowing the code he pulled, you need to bring it in and get more specific as to what the code was. But if you've been a long time without spark plugs or various maintenance items, that could answer that issue.
And it'll make the car run better, that's for sure. Let's go over to Kurt in Cambridge. Kurt, you're on.
Yeah, my question is about... just for the people that go out and buy dry gas all winter, given the fact that most gasoline has ethanol in it, is there any value for people buying dry gas and putting it in their car anymore?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because you're right. You've already got alcohol in there, 10%. So if you get a lot of water in the fuel, more than the 10% ethanol can handle, you got a big water problem. And for that, they make different additives now, and they have some enzymes in them, and they will combat the separation of the liquids. So if you get too much water in ethanol gas, the water will finally reach a point where it can't stay suspended. It'll turn into a big glob of water, and these products will keep it suspended and allow it to burn out. So there are other treatments to put in, but dry gas is not really that necessary anymore.
Very interesting. Thank you, Kurt. So 10% of the average gas is ethanol, is alcohol?
Yeah, yeah, and 15 in some. Like, you've heard of E85.
Yeah.
That's 15%. Not around here, but alcohol, plant-derived alcohol.
Right. What if you bought premium gas, and then the last 2 gallons you put some Rotgut gin in? Would it work?
It probably would suspend it.
Really?
Yeah. Probably be nice.
All right, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Well, you do that.
Little ice.
You get a junker at the lot and give it a try.
A squeeze of lime or lemon?
I don't know about that. All right, let's go to James and Palmer. James, you're on.
Yes. I have a 2003 Vibe there that has 274,000 miles. And oil changes I used to do there was every 15,000 miles, because I used Mobil Extended with Duralube. But I had a problem with my engine seals, and she went a little bit low on it there, and the check engine light and the oil light came on, and the car just died. They had pulled over to the side of the road, tried starting it, wouldn't start at all. Had it towed home, and I let it sit there for a couple weeks, but in turn, I had put in Marvel Mystery Oil in the crankshaft oil, and I took out the pistons and put them on the top of the pistons and let it sit there for a week. And when I tried starting it there, when it first happened, it would just wouldn't even turn the car over.
Huh.
So then afterwards there, I tried, went out there and says, hey, let's see if old Betsy will start up one more time. Went out there and it was like, yeah, and she started up.
Huh.
And I was wondering, did I really seize the engine and using that stuff there unseized it?
Yeah, you probably did seize it. And seizing can occur in a bunch of different states. You know, you can just barely score the cylinders and make it stick. And a lot of engines will cool off and start 3 hours later, but you've done damage.
Well, this would not start at all there for
right.
a couple of weeks there. It was really cold out and stuff.
Yeah, you took
and,
it to a higher...
You know, I didn't want to...
Yeah, you took it to a higher level of seizure, and that's why the mystery oil went in there and softened things up and freed it up so you could start it. I don't think it's going to fix the engine.
No noise from it, though.
Is it running
it
okay now?
It sounds normal.
Huh.
What's that?
It's running okay now?
It sounds normal. It runs, it idles perfectly. It raised the gas. You don't hear any clink or clank or anything like that there. And when it happened, which got me was there that my temperature gauge never spiked.
Hmm.
It stayed at the normal range.
What kind of shape is the oil in? Have you checked it or drained it out?
Well, I was running real low on it and stuff like that there. I was keeping it a quart low there because I had front and rear seal on the engines was leaking. So I was keeping an eye on it and stuff there. And then I let it go for a couple of days. And then when I was heading to work there, I said, like, I got enough time, I got enough to go to work there. Well, halfway to work, it zonked out on me.
I have a feeling there's some pretty heavy wear and damage going on in there, even though it starts and runs.
All right, James, thanks for the call. Let's go over to Hillary in North Adams. Hillary, you're on.
Hi. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Thanks for all you do, all the things you do at the station. I love all of you.
Thank you.
I am calling because I was so shocked and also very grateful when I turned on the radio and you started talking about cars losing or the oil freezing up like that, congealing or whatever it's doing, because last week I've been having trouble with it. I've spoken to my mechanic, but I didn't get it over there, and I told him I was having trouble with it accelerating. It was dragging. I felt maybe it was the brake was stuck or something because I couldn't get any power, and I felt like the RPMs were too high. And my friend went with me. I was on my way to Albany, which is away from here, and she said, well, maybe it's the oil. I said, the oil? Can't possibly be the oil. I've only got 78,000 miles on the car. It's only been like probably 1,500 miles since the last one. And so before we went out of town, I stopped at Stewart's and said, what the hell? We'll check it. And it was totally dry, and it was rusty. And I freaked out.
Yeah.
So I opened it up. I put in 4.5 quarts of oil. And within a very short period of time, it was driving beautifully.
My goodness.
Mm.
Go ahead.
When you added that oil, were you checking the stick after each quart to make sure you weren't going super over full?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe I was okay.
Wow. That's
a
lot.
It's Saturn View, and it doesn't have a very good dipstick thing.
Yeah.
It said 5W30 on the tank, on the
cap.
The thing you screw in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just used Mobile Special Quality Motor Oil. That's what they had at Stewart's.
Yeah. That's anything that you any oil is better than none when you're just about out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been running fine ever since. I opened it up today to pour the dregs from the other bottles into it just not to waste it, and it still looked rusty just inside the cap, you know? My question is, I have some, at least two or three Albany trips coming up really soon. This all happened last week, by the way.
Okay.
And do I need to have it changed, do you think, right away? I mean, it's driving fine, but is that deceiving me?
Yeah. Here's the thing. When you take the oil cap off in the wintertime, it's very common to see a brown, yellowish, almost like a foam under the cap. And that's because the engine has not gotten warm enough to steam out all the moisture that's developing inside of it.
And it can look rusty.
And it's dirty oil foam. So don't be overly alarmed at that.
But a change might not be a bad idea.
It might not be. Okay. What I like to do is to pull the stick and let some of that oil go onto a white piece of paper. See how bad it is. If it's really super dark already, even though you may have just changed it, change it again. The Honda we spoke about earlier, I had the car come back in a week after we changed it to get another oil change, and that oil was very, very dark after 1 week of driving because it took so much contamination out.
So
it doesn't hurt to overdo it.
Let's go over to Dale in Latham. Dale, you're on. Hello. Oh, he's been waiting for like 20.
Hi, how are you?
There you are. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, here I am. Hey, this is like a different version of Tap It Brothers.
Yeah, well.
I have a car with a twin turbo. A friend of mine said that because of the twin turbos, I should get the oil changed more frequently. And that was one of my questions. The follow-up on that is, what can I do to extend the life of my turbos?
Yeah. Is it an Audi?
No, it's a SL550.
Okay, yeah, because a lot
it's
of your
Mercedes.
Yeah, yeah, because Audi used a lot of twin turbo engines for a while. You didn't see a lot of twin turbos. That's why I asked what make a car it was.
You don't see a lot of Hyundais with twin turbos.
No. And twin turbos are usually on a V configuration engine, one on each side.
All right.
But to go back to the question, Mercedes-Benz's oil change intervals are probably pretty long as well. What does the manual tell you on that vehicle?
If you look 10.
10, yeah.
I usually do it around 5 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah, my recommendation to you would be to completely cut those in half. So do it every 5 and use whatever quality oil is recommended, which on that vehicle is going to be a full synthetic. And turbochargers hold up way better than they did when they first were available on cars in the 70s and 80s. They're liquid cooled, their oil systems are better. So you don't see a lot of turbo problems at all. Saab used to tell you to come to a stop and leave the engine idling for up to a minute before you shut it off to cool the turbocharger off. But that's really not too much of an issue anymore unless you're really out flat running it super, super hard.
All right, Dale, thanks a lot. Quickly, we'll go over to Richard in Whitesboro. Richard, you have about a minute or so here.
Okay, I have a 04 Nissan with about 40,000 miles, and the light's pretty dim on it. I checked it starts in the coldest of days. I was wondering what you would recommend to check, and especially I questioned, is it possible a relay is effective?
You're talking the headlights aren't as bright as they should be?
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So this is what I would do. Get a voltmeter on it and confirm that the running voltage, engine running, warmed up, operating temperature, on that vehicle, you should see 13.5 volts, maybe 14.2. If those volts are down in the 12s, you could have a regulating issue of the charging system, which is part of the alternator. If your volts
it was in 13 or above.
Yeah, and you need a voltmeter. Don't trust the gauge if you have an instrument in the gauge. If the volts are okay, make sure your headlight lenses aren't fogged or getting cloudy from age.
Yeah.
And then you can also buy a slightly brighter headlight. Silver Stars by Sylvania, I believe, are brighter than stock headlights but don't require any wiring modifications.
Huh.
And that might make it okay for you.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
What about all that stuff you see on late night TV that says we'll clean off all the film off your headlights?
Most of it works.
Really?
The stuff that you just smear on is short-lived, but it still makes them clearer. And then those buffing kits, they do take that film off. So they do work, and they're nice because you got nice clear lights again.
I thought it was snake oil.
No,
it's real.
It is real.
Well, Gordon Fricke, thank you for being here, and thanks to everybody who called in. And I apologize to the 9 people on the line we did not get to today. It's just that's the way it is when Gordon is here. He's like the Beatles, very popular. Support comes from George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries, georgepropane.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Thanks again to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for listening and for the calls and emails. Zach Malloy has been our engineer and continues to be our engineer. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Colleen O'Connell took your calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh yeah, Skyman Bob returns to answer your astronomy questions. Right now, stand by for news.